Thank you, everyone. I know that I'm eating into your lunchtime, so I'll have to try and make this extra funny for you to keep your concentration. So it's kind of telling that I'm going to be talking about social media, and I'm in this kind of spot that doesn't fit quite between curators, quite between collectors, and so I'm going to try and link together or stitch together some of these things. And yes, as Edwin said, this is kind of riffing off a book that Natalie King, who's over there, and I edited on rethinking the region in terms of intimate publics, so understanding publics, the notion of publics and intimacy as culturally specific. I'll talk about that in more detail. All right, so given the uneven ubiquity and definitions of new media today, I will focus on social media not just as a vehicle for art dissemination, but also as a conceptual driver for art and artists. Over the past decade, I've been exploring the socio-cultural dimensions of media practice in the region and how it connects us to intimate publics. Here we need to understand intimacy as something that is understood across individual, social, and cultural levels. Through the lens of media practice, we can gain insight into how intimacy is changing and what role media can play in the arts, from artists to curators to institutions. In Indonesia, boasting over 20 million Twitter users and more than 5.3 million blogs and over 42.5 million Facebook users, Fatima is typical of her generation Y users, moving between Facebook and Twitter constantly throughout the day. Dubbed as Twitter Nation or Facebook Country, these acronyms are really, tricky. Anyway, Indonesian media practices are as political as they are public, and they are as personal as they are intimate. For Fatima, the surfing between these two media platforms allows her to gain a sense of not only what her friends are feeling, but also a context for determining what political issues are important. For Fatima, social media, mobile media, plays an integral role in Indonesian contemporary urbanity. She couldn't imagine how she could keep in contact with her friends and what to know, news-wise, what is important without her mobile phone. Through Fatima's everyday mobile use, we see how social and mobile media are providing new ways for imagining and experiencing place and intimacy. Mobile media penetrations in Indonesia have now burgeoned to over 22 million consumers, with an average Indonesian owning 1.68 SIM cards. Operating across micro and macro levels, public and private spaces, these practices both highlight existing culturally specific notions of intimacy, as well as heralding new ways in which to co-presently participate in placemaking practices. These mobile moments in the region highlight that place is not just geographic, it is a constellation of the imagined, emotioned, experienced, and social. Speaking of social, Ai Weiwei. And yet, within the arts, mobile and social media occupies a predominantly functional rather than conceptual role. This is despite the fact that you have many artists working in this space, like Ai Weiwei, the fact that he uses Twitter, which is actually banned in China, is a very political thing. You have Amy Sillan, Corey Archangel, Xiao Fei, Scott Snibble, Rafael Lozano Hermer, and Man Barlett have all been active in eroding the divisions between new media and visual art. It is this converging space of mobile and social media that see old tensions between new media and visual art persisting. It is this converging space which we actually see eroding the tensions between new media and visual art, and yet you still have critics like Claire Bishop who will still, kind of argue for this. So in this talk, I would like to move away from this unproductive and reductive new media visual art paradigm and instead talk about the messy space that is social media and how it is helping to reimagine what is intimate, engaged, present, public, and contextualized. While media has always been social, it is social media which is challenging how the social is constituted by the political and the personal. I argue that we need to engage with the messy space of social media not just as a branding tool or a vehicle for dissemination, but as an active archive and practice that is defining the ways in which artists, institutions and curators get visualised, conceptualised and understood within multiple and competing publics. Social media isn't just a dissemination or publicity tool. It is part of the multiple seams that bind and unbind us to the personal, to the political, to the intimate, to the public. Institutions have to understand the lingo and often tacit and contesting etiquette, or they risk becoming unsocial and antisocial. Oh, hang on, I'll just move back. There have been multiple stories of institutions, artists, and judges getting social media wrong. Video games discussions often are ripe with these misunderstandings. In locations such as South Korea and China, acontextualised stories of death via constantly playing video games without interrogation of the actual circumstances involving the practice. But the media effects model isn't just pervasive in broadcast media. It seems to also have a kind of place in institutions. And we really need to develop more sophisticated, nuanced understandings of social media. And let me just give a case scenario. Recently, a friend had a PhD graduation exhibition at some Melbourne Uni art gallery. On the eve of his opening, he showed the gallery manager his Facebook account in which he had 1.5k friends. Okay, now you just pause, 1.5k. That's pretty good. That's collecting friends. And we know that collecting friends on Facebook doesn't actually mean the same thing as collecting friends in real life. In fact, you could actually argue the reverse. Anyway, he commented how he'd invited all of these 1.5 friends. And he'd received many likes and acceptances. The gallery manager went ghostly white. She panicked and contacted security. The student was then informed that his opening was cancelled due to the inability of the gallery to house that many people. So, what do we learn from this situation? One, everybody knows that like or yes to an event on Facebook doesn't mean the same as a face-to-face yes. Two, everybody knows that a friend on Facebook is a variable and questionable notion. Three, Facebook is often used to archive overseas networks and friends, and so half of these friends on his Facebook were actually overseas. So they might like it, but they're not going to get there. Four, Facebook has its own formulations of what is intimate and what is public. Five, universities and galleries need to start to understand the intimate public nature of social media, like Facebook, if they are going to deploy them strategically and conceptually. So, what is an intimate public? In India, one can find the third biggest users of Facebook with over 57 million users. In Indonesia, there are 43 million users in the nation that has been called Twitter Nation. In China, where Facebook is banned, a healthy diet of QQ, Weibo and WeChat to dominate, highlighting the significance of a rich social media which is synonymous with mobile media. With a strong Shanji culture, which is Shanji is basically pirate culture, which keeps the smartphone prices down. In fact, a lot of older people prefer to have the fake smartphones because they have a louder ringtone so that you can actually hear the phone. So we see that 42 million Chinese users of the total 560 million users do so only from a mobile phone. Estimates have internet users in Asia at more than 1 billion, representing 44.8% of the world population. In Southeast Asia, locations like Indonesia, Vietnam, and Thailand are boasting the highest penetration rates of social media use. In the region, social media is playing out in complex and diverse ways. It is personal, it is political, it is intimate, it is public. It is also about providing new ways of traversing the social with the geographic, the political with the personal. And with the uneven rise of smartphones and social media globally, we are seeing the growth of the vernacular and the local within media and art practices. So as the social and locative mobile media render the intimate public and the public intimate, How is this shaping and being shaped by the role of place, art, and art practice and politics? How are these new modes of engagement, distribution, and participation promised by online media changing the way in which art is practiced and how audiences participate? What does it mean to like art? So what I want to do is I just want to move towards a specific example in which social media was not used as a function, as in terms of functional, but actually part of the conceptual premise and the way in which it can weave together art and media. So what I'm going to look at is a mobile media game which was made for an art context, and it was made for a post-311 Tokyo context. 311, as we know, was the Fukushima. Well, it started off with the earthquake, then the tsunami, and then the Fukushima reactor. And so making art in this kind of context in Tokyo now, you really, it's impossible not to engage with that. And one of the things that happened during 311 was that the government actually contacted NHK, which is like ABC equivalent, so it's the main broadcaster, and they actually got them to withhold a lot of information. So the public was not getting information from the broadcaster, and when the public found out about that, they shifted completely from broadcast media and started using Twitter and Facebook. And so you actually start to see a dramatic shift in that context. But I'll just tell you a story. When the earthquake occurred, I was alone in my room playing a Monster Hunter PSP game. Exactly at that time, I was fighting with a monster who makes an earthquake happen, so I didn't realise that an actual offline earthquake had occurred. Only after beating down the monster, I realised that something was different around me. A fish tank had overflown and books had fallen down. Initially, I was not shocked by the earthquake itself, but felt a frustration with the aftermath. The panic, the power failure, the panic buying, the nuclear disaster, the government cover-up and such stuff. During this time, I stayed inside with a friend and continued to play the Monster Hunter game, but the game was no longer entertaining. This is by Toshi, a 25-year-old male. This quote from Toshi sees him playing a haptic game during the Fukushima earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster known as 311. Effective and personal technologies such as social and mobile media make us rethink old psychological Western models for inside-outside models of emotion. During the trauma of 311, it was mobile media that captured the palpable, effective texture of grief. And this is probably one of the most famous images taken by the mobile phone. In the days after 311, as multiple and conflicting news reports emerged across mass and social media, Toshi and his friend used the game to hide from the pain and confusion. Later, as it emerged that national broadcaster NHK had deliberately withheld information about the Fukushima reactor under the instructions of the government, Toshi, like millions of other Japanese, shifted their trust towards mobile media like Twitter and Instagram to not only help them gain a sense of what is intimate, but also what was public, and also an idea of a perpetual sense of co-presence with their family and friends. It's against this backdrop that there was a collaboration, an ARC linkage called Spatial Dialogues with the Japanese Boat People Association with a project in June 2013 called Shibuya Underground Streams. And the project, in this project, we tried to develop different artistic ways in which to map Tokyo in terms of its hidden streams. Through a series of video, sound, game, and sculptural narratives, Underground Streams sought to bring the public, to make them aware of the kind of constantly, the continuous, perpetual underground streams making up much of Tokyo. So this is the invite for it. So there's a stream that goes straight under one of the busiest intersections in not only in Tokyo, but in the world, Shibuya. So there's a boat going down there. So we put a shipping container in a park, a public park, and we did a whole lot of projects out of this shipping container. And the one in particular that I want to talk about is Keitai Mizu. So Keitai Mizu means basically mobile water. And we got a whole lot of Japanese and Australian artists to make water creatures. These water creatures could be real water creatures, imaginary water creatures. They could be from, they could be native Japanese creatures, or they could be from Australia or whatever. And then we put them all around the park. And these are some examples. Now, as you can see, some of them look more like art and others look less like art. So, for example, here you've got some tiny little stickers here, or here some stuff made from kind of hardware. And we kept the rubbish in the park as well. So what happened was we asked people to use their... So it's like a shooting game, but rather than having a gun where you go and shoot things in, like, in a game environment, what you do is you're using the camera phone to shoot things. So it's the metaphor, the kind of the hunting metaphor of photography. So people would use Twitter and go around and Instagram, and for those that... Does everyone know what Instagram is? I'm just double-checking. Okay, I'm getting nods. It's basically a second-generation camera phone app that allows you to connect to Facebook and Twitter almost immediately. And the great thing about things like Instagram is that it has geotagging, so you get a really interesting sense of how geography is mapped over to these images. So people play this game. They had 10 minutes to run around and photograph what were the art creatures, the water creatures, that were native to Tokyo. So A, it assumed that they could tell the difference between the rubbish and the art. B, that they could actually then, once they worked out what was the art, they could tell the difference between what was the Japanese one and what was the Australian or overseas one. And so, anyway, it had people running around the park, and it was really about kind of playing between the idea of art and non-art, water and non-water, game and non-game. And it was really about the idea that the player was also the ethnographer. And so here you have people, and while they're taking pictures, because like often people will use Instagram to take a picture of their food, and friends who aren't there with them physically will say, oh, that looks delicious, what are you eating? And so when they're taking these pictures of these strange creatures, they're like, what are you doing? And so you had a lot of people who weren't actually physical players, but were players in other spaces actually helping them. So it was really about that idea of co-presence. And so here, this is, for those that aren't familiar with Instagram, you can see that you can have like comments and people can like things and it can go to different feeds. Okay, so I'm just going to finish with the conclusion, and I have a little video because I thought this would be kind of in the age of selfies. The view. This is a Korean ad. So what do you do when you see a dead body? You get out your mobile phone. You document it. That makes it real. And then you take a selfie, because that's even going to make it more real. Sorry, there's a bit of lag in here. I'll just read through the conclusion. Okay. So every day, 60 million camera phone users, camera phone images are shared via Instagram. These apps play an active role in how places are conceptualized, mapped, and experienced. And currently, museums and universities are using Instagram much more as just that dissemination rather than actually kind of part of their conceptual toolkit. With camera phone geotagging, the temporal and spatial dimensions of... Yeah, so she's talking on the phone as well. So. Yep, okay, all right. Okay, you just have to, yeah, you have to see the Instagram, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, okay. Oh, no, let me just, yeah, okay, so you get the point, all right. Nokia claims to have put more cameras in the hands of everyday users in the whole history of photography. Some have noted that 90% of people have only taken pictures via their camera phone. For millions of online users in the region, the mobile phone has become synonymous with social media, having many of them never accessed it via computer. So from disasters to celebrations, camera phone practices play a really key role in the abundance of shared images globally. And so this kind of feeds back to the previous panel in terms of archiving, thinking about it a bit more conceptually in terms of digital media. In the sinking of the South Korean boat on the 16th of April this year, in which 250 school children were drowned, it was the found phones of these deceased with damning camera phone footage that evidenced procedures gone wrong. With some of the images taken by children as young as 8 years old, camera phone footage showed terrifying scenes of people panicking and procedures gone awry. Here, camera phone footage is not just the witness for court prosecutions and trauma-laden images for the families of the deceased, but also functioned as a highly effective memorial that quickly spread globally and consolidated wide world public outcry. The particular effective features of camera phones provided an authenticity of being there, so that's why she had to do that selfie while the dead person was there, that has become an embedded part of everyday life. So in this talk, I've sought to highlight the importance of understanding social media as an integral part of everyday life, and thus as intrinsically bound to how we practice, conceptualise and represent art. Social media is interwoven with the political as it is the personal, the intimate as it is the public. Within the context of Indonesia as a so-called Twitter global capital, it is even more apparent and palpable, and a fact that must be embraced by the arts community. Thank you. Thank you.